There was a trend in network television, maybe more so cable, I feel like. It started with Sopranos. I noticed it a lot on HBO, where the penultimate episode before the season finale tended to be the big one, where, like, everyone died. Now, I'm not saying that next week is the season finale, but I think we're circling the drain on this season. So there's a good chance this episode coming up is a penultimate-ish type ep. The only reason I think that is we're all going to die and then play new characters to finish out the fucking pendant mission. anybody else feel that? That's what happened with Riker. You know what I mean? Riker died in the... It was like a Game of Thrones type thing. Episode 9 of 10 is where you kill off the character. That's what I feel like is happening here. Your thoughts?
Yeah. I think that the chances of us all dying really rest upon how short a trigger Roger has on the whole situation, to be honest with you.
If you want to throw that on my shoulders, I'll allow it.
There's a lot of, we've given ourselves a lot of options as far as ways to die.
Sure.
Going into this meeting, so.
So we're in control. Yeah. We choose how control. We die.
That's right. We're spoiled for choice as well, which is nice. We can any way that suits our fancy, we can choose to expire.
Well, based on the story thus far, what you remember of it, you have your projections. What's the word I'm looking for? Your conjecture. I can't. Your assumptions about what is happening here, who these people might be, and you know what they might be looking for. But yeah, I'm curious if you sort of think about everything that's happened thus far and the conversation that Roger had, and where you're at this point. What you think their motive is going into this? Because I think that you, as characters, would kind of want to know that, or have some thoughts about it. Particularly people like Gavin and Caesar, who put a lot of stock into Humint. I don't know if Magdalena did. But just knowing and understanding like why someone wants something is something that I know is a priority to Caesar. And so, yeah, I'm just kind of curious what you guys think, the motivation is here, or if you're, just like, let's just see if we can feel it out, by talking to them.
I got thrown for a total loop because I thought I was doing my due diligence by doing human int on those CDC agents, handing them my card saying, get in contact with me at the coroner's office. And then they end up tailing us, you know? So part of it is it's like written in the very first couple pages of the agent's handbook of Delta Green, which is Delta Green, it lies. It's like one of the core tenets of the game.
It's true. It's like one of the first things it says about the game.
So, yeah, it's difficult to say. I'm hoping I can get off a couple cheeky human rolls without really letting go of our hand as we're going, and maybe on an important note where they don't believe us, maybe a persuade roll. It's weird. I was thinking about it too. Like, I'm not always sure exactly what to say to these people who are keeping all their cards by their vest. I was thinking about how oftentimes in a lot of other games we play, like we give circumstance bonuses to diplomacy checks based on how good the speech is. Imagine if we did that for like swinging a sword at a monster. Like it's like, here, grab that broadsword in the corner, Grant. Swing it one time and see how, like it's tough. I'm so worried. And all those rifles.
Yeah, like if this turns into a firefight,
we're dead.
I think Roger can take out a few of them, but like most of us are going to die. So if it comes down to them just being like, we want the amulet, or, I just don't know how this is going to... this seems unwinnable. You know what I mean? It's like, it seems like the GM has given us an unwinnable, situation. So we either have to talk our way out of it or clever our way out of it, because I don't think we can shoot our way out of it.
No, not even with Roger.
Agreed.
It's kind of like that. Yeah. There's a scene towards the end of the original Red Dead Redemption. I won't go into spoilers, but it's like, yeah, we have Roger Cumstone. But there's just too many guys with rifles.
Right. Yeah, I know exactly what scene you're talking about. And the thing is, if we had one more, if we had a Riker Solace, I think we'd have a chance. And that's nothing. That's just not the way the other characters are built. So Roger, whether you like him or not, is not going to jeopardize everyone's lives. He's going to take that into account. The fact that that's why what he was pontificating upon when he was sitting in the car, he's like, if I was with my original unit, this would be a lot easier. If things went sour, we'd fight. We'd go to war. You cannot go to war with this team.
No.
They're not soldiers.
I imagine all this going through Roger's head so fast as you step out of the car, and within seconds you see out of these other cars a bunch of armed men just getting out, and he immediately weighs the odds, does the calculations, and thinks to himself, if I start firing off here, I'm going to get everybody killed. And so he's, I imagine that's exactly what he's thinking. And he's able to put all that together that fast, just kind of weighing the odds as he's walking up. But let's get back in. So this meeting, you saw two women walking towards you from one of the cars, one of whom is Eileen Parker, and the other of whom is a woman that you don't know. And then the CDC agents are sort of behind them, and then a little bit of a distance away, armed men are standing there. And Roger, you get the sense just from your experience that that they seem to be, you know, overseeing this, right? Like security of some kind, keeping an eye on you. There's no direct threat at the moment, but the threat is unspoken. It's an indirect threat, because they're already showing their weaponry. Is there anything that you guys want to do, whether it's mentally or search-wise or anything like that, in the instance before we start here?
I mean, taking your cue, I think I'll do a human roll just to see. If there's any cues I can pick up on in the situation right now.
Okay. So will Gavin.
Yeah, so I'd like to
Magdalena will.
I'd like to do alertness just to really assess if there's any other threats or things that are not immediately evident.
31 under 40 for humans for Jordy.
4 under 60 for human for Gavin.
50. 28 under 40. Sorry, no, what'd you get?
Oh, please. Sorry.
28 under 50. Nice. Or 40.
And a 50 under 84 for alertness.
Ooh. And a fail from Caesar with a 61 over 60.
So. He sets off the dog grenade.
All right, make sure you check that off, Grant. And so, for those of you that roll Humint in these split seconds,
I'm sorry,
right?
That's a 16, if that matters. Sorry to interrupt. I misread my dice.
Okay. So, those of you that rolled Humint, the immediate vibe that you get from the two women who you can see walking closer to you, is that they seem confident. They seem, they don't seem too concerned, as they stroll towards you. That's all that you can tell at this point. They're not super cagey or super defensive. They're just kind of strolling up to you. Roger, with your alertness, you scan and quickly with your eyes, you're very good at this. You don't see any telltale signs of concealed weapons on the women. And in the distance, because you're so good, you know what you're looking at. You see that these guys are wielding extremely high quality military grade rifles, some of which have scopes on them. And so, you know, you're dealing with a legit outfit. This isn't stuff that you just grab on the black market. So you get the sense that what they're wielding is high level stuff.
I wonder if there's snipers too, like there were.
Yeah. And with your alertness, you don't see anybody positioned. Like any muzzles pointing at you anywhere. You don't see that anywhere. You're looking on top of the dumpsters in this recycling center. You're looking around the corners in the dark, whatever, as you're walking up, you know, just a 360 degrees alertness for Roger. And on a success, you don't see anything like that. As you step forward,
we're all friends here.
Exactly. you're all friends. As you step up, the two women come close and stop, you know, when they're maybe 10 or 15 feet away from you. Everybody's headlights are off and you're just sort of lit by the ambulant auxiliary lighting of this place around the main office, which just looks like a shack in the middle of the place. And you see that this taller, slightly older woman has darker skin. You would guess that she is of Indian descent, Indian Asian descent. It sort of looks to be that way. And she steps forward and says, "Thank you so much for coming to this meeting. Which of you is Roger Comstone?"
Take a wild guess.
You know who I am.
Ah, I've not had the pleasure to meet you in person. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Dr. Rebecca Thornhill, and my associate here has said that she has a history with you, that you've worked together in the past.
That's right.
And Jordy. Are you Jordy? She points to Jordy.
Yeah. Your powers of deduction are staggering.
He says, breathing from his oxygen concentrator.
Well, Rachel has told me she knew you as well. And I'm happy to see that
Rachel. Rachel knew him as well?
Mm-hmm. I'm happy to see that you've come to your senses here. We are under a serious time pressure, I think you realize, and I don't want to waste any more time getting whatever this is out of Glen Ridge. Now, I appreciate the work that you have done, and it would be very helpful if we could work together on this. But ultimately, we need to get this thing and get it to our laboratories. So, Rachel tells me that you have already been underway in your investigation, and we understand you have a breakthrough. And she looks around for a second. An amulet. Are you aware of exactly what this amulet does?
Can we pause for just a second? So, Eileen Parker is actually Rachel Thornhill? Is that what you're saying?
No. Her name is Dr. Rebecca Thornhill, but she referred to this woman as Rachel.
As Rachel.
You know as Eileen.
Referred to Eileen as Rachel.
Okay.
Sorry. Oh. Also, hold on. This is like a retcon, and you can totally not allow it, Joe, but out of character. What if we give them the elder sign instead of the amulet? Do they know exactly what it looks? They have no idea, do they?
Keep that in mind. We may need
just
that.
Something to think about.
You might be like, all right, Jordy, give him the amulet.
That is a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
What are they going to say? This isn't it? And we'll be like, whoops, we thought it was. Rout, rout.
Okay. Well, it isn't in the trunk.
Nothing's in the trunk.
Nothing's in the trunk.
No, there's nothing in the trunk. Nothing.
You better
in the
not
trunk.
Go in there.
And just one other bit of speculation. Without entirely knowing what that artifact is, that could be even more dangerous, potentially, if we don't trust these people.
Yeah, true, yeah.
I suppose so.
Well, I could... I don't know what to do. I was thinking, like, I could pull it out and break it, because it's so fragile. It's like, no amulet for anybody.
They shoot us.
I don't know. Then they just shoot us. I don't know.
Well, let's get back to the conversation. She asks you if you know what it does. Does anybody respond, or do you just stand in silence staring at her?
We have guesses.
I think Magdalena looks at the at Rebecca, doctor, and she says, "You don't know what it does?"
No, not currently. We have a team working on it as we speak. We hope to get to the bottom of it very soon. And if it is vital to the understanding or the finding of whatever is murdering these people, then it is going to be an extremely valuable piece that I believe you have. Do you not?
You know who's not murdering these people? The five of us. Five of us have nothing to do with this Glen Ridge chiropractor. Thought we were going to have a little conversation, but it seems that you brought the cavalry, which was smart, I suppose. I see neither of you are armed. It's good to have some backup, some real muscle, if your talking doesn't work out. Sure you understand that I could kill both of you before they get me. So I'd be very careful how you talk to me and how you talk to my friends. Maybe I didn't get a lot of education, but they did.
I apologize if I came off as rude. I'm simply looking for a sharing of information here, Roger.
You didn't think it was rude to have four meatballs come out of the car with rifles? Back where I come from, that's fucking rude.
Well, Roger...
And I'm from Baltimore.
Let me be blunt, Mr. Comstone. It's come to my attention that you had long been considered retired from the program for reasons amounting to post-traumatic stress, imbalance, instability, unpredictability. You should not have been sent into the field, Mr. Comstone. And it is for that reason that we felt it necessary to bring protection for ourselves. We cannot expect you to act as we would think, and so we must be as careful as possible. And you know while you're talking to her that these guys are out of your shot. They're far enough away that, like, they can't hear you. They're not standing right next to you. They're pretty far in the distance. She says, but... And she looks over to Rachel, who you know as Eileen, and looks back at you. But we decided to gamble on the fact that you understood the difference between being... outgunned and being threatened. I don't wish to threaten you, Roger. I just wish to protect my team.
Well, I hope you understand.
It's a real Mexican standoff for the speaking order there. Like, pointing at each other.
I think Sydney and I, our Zoom timing is just off enough that we can jump at each other.
There's just a hair of delay. It sucks. You said you wanted to share information and that was the point of the meeting. Well, if you think we have what you want, what the hell could you possibly give us?
Well, I'm... What is it you're looking for? I thought we were all looking for the same thing. To stop this wretched thing from killing any more innocent people.
Yeah, of course. And we go through our handler, who you are not. Listen, I don't trust you. I don't know you. I don't know who Rachel is. So how can I trust you? Give me something. Give me some good piece of information. Something juicy.
She looks back at the two CDC agents. They nod.
Ooh.
She looks back to you. She says, you were the one that so cunningly slipped away with the lab report, yes?
Oh, this old thing? Yeah. oh, you're talking about the lab report with the CDC agents, and she waves to the two guys.
They wave back. They each hold up a hand and then put their hands back down. Arms or hands crossed in front of their waistband.
Yeah, I didn't trust them either, which turns out I shouldn't have. So, sure.
Did you have a look at it.
Maybe. Why?
Well, if you would have looked at the lab report, you would know who ran the tests on this gray substance and who is, as far as science is concerned, the leading agency interested in this. Are you telling me you stole the lab report and didn't look at it?
No, I looked at it. And Sydney is going to look through the notes to see if she remembers what was on the lab report.
Oh, I looked at it.
Okay, so I rifled through my bag.
You stole the lab report.
Here, hold on one second.
Let me tell you, you stole the lab report and never looked at it.
Are you kidding me? Oh, did I really not?
But Gavin did.
Gavin did?
Yeah, because I emailed it to myself, remember?
Someone did because
check
we saw
your notes
the
there, Mr. Handler.
Yeah, we saw the corporation, or we saw.
I was just waiting for somebody
something
to say what's in the lab report.
I don't remember what was in it, but I forwarded it to myself and then deleted it from the computer at the coroner's
office. I do remember that. But did you ever examine it?
Yes, it got lost in the shuffle of the idea to text. The
to
kid.
Draw him to the
oh,
marina.
Yeah.
But we did go back and say we read the email. In the car. We were in the car.
Okay, so you said in the show that you examined the lab report.
I don't think
you did.
I think I did.
But if you did,
let's go back to the tape.
all right, well, I will...
it's crazy that they wouldn't have. Just like last week, Roger knows not to shoot in the car. But there is that whole we may have never said
yeah.
did
it.
It's like checking bodies for what's on them. It's like something you assume they do.
Well, if you go to Roll 20, you can see the lab report.
Definitely never seen this.
Yeah, I've definitely never seen this. But I remember you describing something about it.
Oh, you said Archon. You said who it was. You said it was done by Archon.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that name because I remember you told us something. I guess I assumed when you said that, I was like, I read the lab report.
Mm-hmm.
I knew all about it.
Okay. Well, then let's assume you read the lab report. And she says this to you and you say, yes, I read the lab report. And she'll say, Archon, bioscience, that's us. And we are very interested in making sure that whatever deposited this substance is never attacking an innocent again.
So then wouldn't be the best course of action to destroy it?
To destroy what?
The artifact.
Well, we don't know what the artifact does. It's possible destroying the artifact could draw the creature out, in which case, and you know, you can see she's changing her tone a little bit, keeping her voice down, in which case it would give us an ample opportunity to capture it. But we simply don't know if that's how the amulet works. Destroying it might be a bit too hasty.
Roger starts laughing. He says, I'm lighting up a cigarette! He yells to the cavalry, puts his hands up, reaches in. Lights up a smoke. It's like when I finished my last mission and I moved away. There was a time, maybe a week, maybe a month, where I thought I got away. Thought I started over. The dreams even stopped. But it wasn't long before they started back up again. I realized very early that I could never escape this. Then when I got the sign to come back, it was a sign I was waiting for. Now that I'm back, I remember one of the things I was trying to run away from in the first place. Not the monsters, but people like you. The real monsters. The ones that want to use whatever's going on outside of the natural world
for your own purposes. Hey, I don't blame you. If I knew how to do math and science, maybe I would have got into that. But don't stand there and act like we don't know what the fuck's going on here. You want the truth from us, then you give us the fucking truth.
Roger, the truth is that I am not in this for my own personal gain. I am part of an organization. I have people I answer to. Roger, it is the same organization that you worked for in the past. I would have hoped that just seeing Rachel, her real name is Rachel. So, there. That is a piece of information. I think I slipped earlier when I just said it, and the woman looks at her. Rachel Eileen, looks at her. She looks back at you. We wanted you to feel comfortable, Roger. See a familiar face. We work for the United States of America, Roger. I'm not in this for personal gain. I'm in this for the protection of the American people. Have you ever thought that you could be on the wrong side of this?
There were times when I was over there when I thought that. I was putting bullets through kids, lighting off explosives in churches.
Is that an official operation?
I didn't question my sergeant.
Your sergeant told you to blow up a church?
Your sergeant had the power to authorize this?
It was incidental damage. It was a hideout. They were hiding out in there. We had to blow it up. But it was during a service.
But it was during a service.
The point is, there was a time.
To use the other congregants as human shields. I couldn't allow that.
There was a time. There was a time when I was over there. I was making decisions that weren't mine. Where I did question if I was doing the right thing. If I was fighting for the right side. I think about it every day. It haunts me. You don't know what it's like to live and die for the United States of America. But listen, we can sit here and argue all night long. This is going to end one way or another. What do you want? You want the amulet?
Yes.
And then what? We just go about our merry way? Tell our handler that, sorry, the mission not accomplished. Or do we tell them, like, another agency claiming to be the real Delta Green? They came and they took the amulet. Sorry. What's the end game here? I think I know how it ends. I see a few possibilities. But I want to hear from you.
You have to decide for yourselves. If you hand us the amulet, your part in this story is over. You can go back to your lives and not risk coming face to face with this thing. That is what these troops are trained for. And she's referring to this group of mostly men, one woman in the distance. They're well armed. Roger, between you and me, they have what it takes to capture this thing. You all do not. And I think that if you want to live, if you want to blissfully return into a quiet retirement, stay out of all this, all of you, it's not his decision. It's your own choice. If you want to get out from under this, give us the amulet and we will handle the creature. You'll have no responsibility. As for your handler has a different priority than we do. Your handler does not prioritize the defense of the United States of America.
Who is he?
As simple as that.
What does he prize?
Who are we working for? We thought we were working for the same team.
In a way, you are.
You know
but
what?
You're working.
No. Those guns aren't for us. Those guns are for the monster that you and your team are so afraid of. You're not going to kill us. We're going to walk away. Actually, we're all going to get back into our car and we're going to leave because we never had the amulet to begin with. Why would we bring it here and risk that? So you know what? I'm out of here. Fuck this and fuck you. And Magdalena walks back to the car.
Why? She's a fiery one. She's wrong, though. We know you have the amulet. And, well, she is right about one thing. We're not going to kill you, Roger. It doesn't serve any of our purposes to leave a bunch of bodies on the ground of people who are trying to help people. But if you want to turn your back on your country, that's your decision. And you'll have to live with it. But rest assured, we will not stop until we get what we need. Stay out of our way, and it'll be easy for you. Get in the way, and I'm afraid of what this creature might do to a law student, a rich boy, an ailing man. Looking at Jordy. Take your lives and go live them. Let us handle this.
What does Archon want to do with the thing once you get your hands on it?
We will study it. We'll research its xenobiology. Oh. Its possible uses. Who knows? It could be the source of a great cure. It could be the source of intelligence to stop this sort of thing in the future. There's a great deal that could come out of this, but simply killing it, what is that? Does that serve anyone? At this point, your high humant leads you to believe she's not lying at all, that she's believes in what she believes in, and that she's just seeing this as an opportunity to study something, and that you can tell that she just has the vibe of a scientist. You know what I mean? Somebody that wants to research, somebody that wants to get to the bottom of this, as opposed to destroying it, which to her seems foolish. And you get the sense that it's all above board. And when she says that they don't want to, are not going to murder you here, you believe that that's true.
I didn't like that she said it wouldn't be allowed once they captured it to kill innocents again, which left open the door, at least grammatically, to it killing non-innocents or being used as a weapon.
Yeah, they're going to summon this thing and they're going to use it in any way they want to learn from it. And part of that learning process may include unleashing it on people and studying that, unleashing it on people in a controlled environment. And studying that, I mean, this could very well be Delta Green.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we got a satisfying answer from her about what we're supposed to tell our handler and who our handler is, if not, you know, who we should be trusting.
She may not know.
I have an idea. So, she mentions the possibility that this creature could be brought into being via the destruction of the amulet, which I hadn't thought of before. If that's true, what we could maybe do is let them blow it up.
See what happens.
See what happens. I'll pull out the amulet, the tablet, cut myself with my penknife, read the spell. Have us gather together and let them have it out. They may kill the creature. They're on their back foot, so they wouldn't be in a position to capture it.
Sorry, let me just correct a few things. One, okay. She said that she didn't know if destroying it would summon the creature, and if it didn't, it would be risky, so she didn't want to break it. But just to be clear about what she said. And then the ritual takes hours.
Oh, well, then don't listen to me.
Yeah. Sorry. It's actually cool. Like, I'd love to get into it.
I had this whole scene playing out in my mind, but now it won't happen.
I know. Sorry.
We
but
could
it
summon
is,
it back at the hotel.
It is a,
then run.
It's a mechanical thing within Delta Green. There's tons of different rituals, and this is like one kind of ritual, the Elder Sign ritual. And for the most part, yeah, they take a long time to do.
Okay. I have no idea what to do.
Gavin is not like uninterested in the summoning thing, but sorry, go ahead, Skin.
Well, I was just gonna. I mean, now it's like if there isn't a well, no, never mind. Sorry.
I think what you guys have to just do is decide if you want to go against these people, which does not necessarily mean a firefight, but go against the wishes of these people to destroy everything, or if you want to side with these people to study everything. That's sort of the basic decision that's in front of you, and that informs all further decisions.
Yeah, fuck them.
Everybody on board with fuck them?
Yeah, because
nobody has any doubts.
I do have doubts, and I want to know more. I have such doubts.
I'll say this. When Magdalena walked away from everybody, she absolutely calls Carson. When she gets back to the car, she's just going to dial Carson and see if he picks up and see, like, what this time relation is. Like, where is Carson right now in this moment, and is he related at all to the events that are unfolding?
Okay. Everybody's outside the car and they're talking, and we see it through the windshield as you sit down and you're just like, fuck this, and you pull out your phone and you call Carson. You know it's 12:15 in the morning. Click. Magdalena?
Carson, it's an emergency.
What's happened? Be careful what you say.
I think things might be compromised. We are in a situation, and it's a sticky one. Where are you?
I'm home. Are you in danger? Is somebody in danger?
I think possibly. Has anyone contacted you?
No. What happened?
I can't say. Not on this line. I gotta go. And I hang up the phone. And now I'm more confused.
Gavin is gonna say, if you're asking us to disobey direct orders from our handler, we need a better explanation from you about who you are and who they are, and what we would have to do to get out of it. We're under direct orders to destroy this thing.
Yeah, Jordy is thinking there is no reason to believe or trust anybody who isn't our handler. Just knowing everything that Delta Green gets up to and the other parties that might be interested, I am on board with just letting this thing be destroyed. And because Jordy's like, I'm not letting this fall into anyone's hands who isn't on we know is on the side of our handler.
Mm-hmm.
And then just let the pieces fall where they may.
Well, Roger's, Gavin, sorry, go ahead, Roger.
Roger's thinking about throwing a grenade over near where all the four or five, whatever riflemen are, and then killing the two women and then dying from gunfire at the hands of the CDC agents. It's like playing out every possible scenario. How can he kill both? Maybe they'll be able to wield the Beretta. He's just working out like every possibility while staring at them, imagining the battlefield.
Yeah.
Knowing that he's outgunned.
Running the scenarios over and over. Mm-hmm. Gavin asks this question, and her response is, Gavin, We don't know everything about your handler and why he called you. We don't know. It's just not something that we're apprised of, but rest assured that I received orders very similar to you that were close but different. We were ordered to capture this thing, and this comes from, well, it comes from the people that your mother worked for. And then you hear Rachel behind her say, "Works for." She turns and says, "I'm sorry, works for."
What?
She looks back at Rachel. Rachel looks right at you, says, "There's information we could give you, Gavin, if you have the amulet. But we're not going to risk. We shouldn't be talking about it, Gavin, but I understand your confusion, and if I can help in any way, I would love to. But we can't do it without the amulet. We have to get this information."
"You don't know anything about my mother. You would say anything right now to get that amulet, wouldn't you? And can I roll to human intelligence?"
"Sure."
I think I failed. 81 over 60.
Oh. Check it. So you can't read if she's feeding you a line or not.
All right, now Gavin is even more confused. This is such a mindfuck, because the organization is so secretive, mm-hmm. that, like, we have no idea, and we have no mechanism to check who.
And also, Delta Green design. Within Delta Green doesn't know stuff about Delta Green. Like, she wouldn't know about Carson. Why would she? Like, there'd be no information given. Yeah, so it's like,
but that's why they would know that that we shouldn't trust anyone who isn't our handler. They'd have to know that.
The thing that stinks like a fucking fish to me.
Yes. But remember one small thing: this other woman was your handler. Not at this operation.
She's not now.
Yeah, I know. I get that. But these changed. These aren't total strangers, is all I'm saying.
There's somebody you know. But like, we cannot trust anyone who isn't our handler.
Also, why would Elaine, whatever her name was, give her real name to this woman if it was still a Delta Green operation? That part is a disconnect for me.
Yeah, they're dirty. Now, is there a chance that there's some other wing of Delta Green? Yeah. But I mean, like,
and what they're saying actually does make sense is the tricky thing. Like, yeah, if we destroy it, it may unleash the monster, and that would be dangerous. Or the amulet doesn't have any actual control over the monster except to summon it, and it can be summoned other ways, so then it doesn't actually change anything if we destroy it.
Well, then there's a second amulet. Did I have that?
It sounds like they did, right?
Well, maybe it's in Peru.
It's in the museum
in
Peru.
We think it is.
Oh, right. Mm. Well, but this is the thing. This is what I'm thinking, is that if this thing can be taken down by any kind of conventional means, it's going to happen now. If it is summoned, like it's going to be, there's 10 armed, like trained people that will probably take it out if it can be taken out. So that's what I'm saying, is like, blow it up. We either like get rid of the means of summoning it, or we summon it and it gets destroyed, or, you know, fuck it, because like they're gonna get it anyway.
Let's go back to what our actual mission is from our original handler. It's to investigate and not let the police know what's going on and stop it from happening.
Not actually correct. You're not supposed to let the police know about any unnatural activity. You need to let the police know who the actual murderer is and close the case.
But we can't, because that would also reveal what's happening. It's that kid, that teen is the murderer. It's not necessarily true. The teen may be an unwitting accomplice of a monster. So, yeah, we could throw the teen under the bus, but like, if they start actually investigating the teen, are they going to find bloody clothes and the murder weapon? No, then we just look like bumbling detectives. They might start finding out about like his connection to South America, and it might open up stuff we don't want them to know.
He has no physical connection to the murders. It's all, it's entirely, you know,
that's all mental. It's all conjecture. Conjecture. Yeah. We're the only reason, we're the only link of him to this murder, to these murders.
I think our, what we should do is just kidnap the kid and force him to do the ritual in front of us.
Yep.
I still don't think he's aware of the ritual. I think it's he falls asleep and it summons the creature to act out on his subconscious thoughts.
Currently the only person that may know. Unless his grandfather is still alive.
Yeah, and he's really mad at me because I'm the only person he saw when he got jumped. So
we can use you as the bait.
All right, let's stop. Rebecca Thornhill and Rachel basically just told you, Gavin, that if you hand over the amulet, they can give you information about your mother. I understand that's a lot to process and that you can choose to not believe them. That decision is put to you right this second, though, and you have to decide that this second. You can walk away, or you can hand them the amulet or offer some information about it. Or,
I mean, Gavin is 100. I would say Gavin feels extraordinarily helpless because he also has been trained to listen to his handler. His handler said he wanted destroyed.
Roll a sanity check.
All right.
Extraordinarily helpless. You used the term.
Oh my God.
It gets me out of having to make a decision. I rolled a 1.
Oh.
Critical. Yeah. So, all right. So you say he feels extraordinarily helpless, but how does he battle back from that? He takes no sanity damage. So what does he do?
I mean, I think he's just going to look to the veterans on the team. He's going to look to Jordy. I mean, he doesn't really trust Comstone. He's going to look to Jordy and be like, what? He's not going to say it out loud, but his expression will read very clearly. What the fuck do we do?
Yeah. And Jordy, with his own telepathic expression, says, blow it up. So I have a question. Who has the keys?
Yeah, so that Caesar has been meaning to say this for a while, but was letting everyone talk. He is sweating. He's under pressure, but not extraordinary pressure.
I knew he was going to qualify it, so he didn't have to do a roll.
He's under pressure.
But I wouldn't call it sanity roll pressure.
It's not. It's not sanity.
If you go insane, then you don't have to worry. You can get out of here scot free.
Listen, this sanity is not sponge worthy, as Elaine might say. Oh no, that's Eileen. I'm sorry. He is sweating there, and he's just looking back and forth and darting in between, and he has his thumb over the key fob. And he's just going in between the lock, unlock, panic, and trunk buttons. Yeah. And he's just kind of doing 1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh my God.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. And he's just waiting to see either shit go wrong with us. He's now, the thing that's complicating it now is that Magdalena's in the vehicle.
I would say that's a minor complication.
So unless we can find a way to get Magdalena out of there, he's not going to press that button.
All right, so
we also have no way of getting out of there.
Yeah, so Caesar is slowly running his fingers over the detonate button, in so many words. Magdalena's in the car talking to Carson, who answered but is so paranoid about saying anything over the phone that could possibly point to this, that you found yourself unable to explain, and so you just hung up. You're sitting in the car. This question is put to Gavin, the amulet for information about your mother, and he looks to Jordy and Roger. Jordy shares a glance that's like, fuck this, we're out of here. And Skid, you haven't, like, Jordy hasn't said anything. It's great to be in his head that, like, he's prioritizing his handler over everything. Mm-hmm. How does that play out in terms of action? What does he do in this moment when Gavin looks at him and he decides he wants to destroy the amulet? Doesn't necessarily mean you have to destroy the amulet this second, but what do you do in that moment when they're standing there? It's like a standoff. They've given you terms in so many words. Give us information, give us the amulet, and you can go off. But you don't want to do that. So now it's like action time. What do you do?
Oh, man.
So hard.
Yeah, this is tough.
So fucking hard.
Because he definitely... he doesn't want to sacrifice Magdalena, Especially, like, none of this, anything that we choose only has, like, a 60% chance of being the right choice anyway, at best.
There is no right choice. I'll say that.
Right.
So,
just being effective.
Sure. I just don't want you to think that, like, you have to be a little more clever to come up with the right solution. Like,
if he didn't know anything, and the amulet was just acting off of his own hatred, like, we should have just put it on and seen if this thing appeared and killed the objects of our hatred.
Oh.
Part of me wants to go in there, slice the dog open, put it on my neck, and see if it comes down and kills these people.
But I think
we know it has to do with sleep.
You
have to be sleeping.
The moon, the lunar, the sun is the opposite of it.
Whether or not you have to perform some sort of ritual and then go to sleep, or if you just sleep with the amulet on, we don't know anything about that. But the kids,
is Roger a narcoleptic on top of everything else?
No,
that would be really handy.
That would be so handy.
No, he has sleeping pills, but they don't really work.
Okay. All right, so Jordy talks to Eileen, former handler, and says,
"Hey, sorry, a bit of a hypoglycemic. You wouldn't happen to have any high C in turkey in one of these cars, would you?"
She looks back toward the car. "No, I'm sorry.
Nobody ever has high C in turkey." And he turns back and says, "Magdalena! Bring me my high C from the glove compartment, please."
Magdalena reaches into the glove department and does pull out Jordy's high C, which he does keep in the glove department.
Which is actually in the glove compartment.
Warm and kind of melted. She takes it out and she gets out of the car and walks back over to the group, knowing that this could be a signal for something. She kind of has her gun, like, feeling it against her thigh in her jacket pocket, and walks back over and just says, "Jordy,
here's your high C. Thank you. Grape flavored, my favorite."
And he takes a long sip, like Jules in Pulp Fiction, staring at Eileen.
"You know, if you want the amulet..."
And he looks over at Grant's character. Sorry. I'm old.
Caesar.
"If you want the amulet, all you gotta do is get in the trunk."
"It's in the trunk?"
"Yep."
"Well, take us to it."
"Caesar,
come with me."
And he's going to do a persuade roll to ask them to lead the way to the trunk.
"I'll open it for you with this fob."
Okay.
So here's the persuade. I'm sweating.
Not suspicious at all.
Oh my god, right. Like, please, walk ahead of me.
Come on, please, please, please. 34 under 60.
Ooh.
The only reason part of me is thinking this is so horrible, but the reason I think this isn't horrible is, like, if they are not Delta Green, and we think they aren't, then eliminating them is part of our fucking job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
what I'm
saying.
They're getting in the way. They're compromising our mission.
And, like, "Oh, you weren't clear enough? I'm sorry. That sounds like your problem."
Yeah.
"Except that the other part of our job is cleaning up after this."
What do you mean by clear enough? Can you just explain that? "You weren't clear enough." What does that mean?
Clear enough that, like, who's the real Delta Green?
Hmm.
They're playing mind games.
All right, so Caesar does this and says, "I'll follow you."
En brave vous.
Yeah, and they seem to trust him. He's so smooth. But they don't trust him that much. So she turns, gives a little head nod to a couple of the guys in the distance. They walk over, again, not raising any weapons, just holding their weapons down at the side in front of them. And they walk until they have an angle on the back of the trunk and everything like that. And the two women walk ahead to the trunk. Caesar, you follow them and you stay right next to them when they open it?
No. 15 to 20 feet away, which
he
is about the range.
He leans his face right into the license plate.
Can I also say, when the women walk away, Magdalena shoots off a text to Carson and just says, possibly compromised, Elaine Parker, a.k.a. Rachel, ... can't trust anyone.
Dr. Scooby-Doo, Archon.
Oh, yeah, and then I say Dr. Thornhill. Dr. Thornhill at Archon with Delta Green, ... emergency, all caps.
Just gonna throw this out there. If you blow that trunk up, we're all dead.
Maybe.
They walk
if
around.
You, if
they
you
walk
blow the
around,
trunk up,
they
and
walk around to the trunk. You have put this plan in motion. That text goes off.
How's the
they
service?
They walk
here?
Around to the trunk. They're looking back at their guys. They look back at Caesar, who's like kind of oddly keeping his distance. And they're standing right there, the back of the trunk.
Caesar, in his mind, is finishing up. And
our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Roger's
thy kingdom come. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done. Click, click.
Trunk opens and the explosion goes off. Fragmentation flying.
Slow down.
Grenade.
Yeah. Everybody slow down. You press the button to the trunk. In that same instant, Magdalena had just sent off a text and she's looking at her phone and it just whoop, and a response comes right through and it just says, Parker confirmed. Then in all caps, do not engage. To click, the trunk lifts up. Shrimp, this twine, tink, pulls a pin out of a grenade. And it's just like, slunk.
Inside of a dog.
And they're all looking at this dead dog for
inside
a
of a
second.
Dog. And clink. The roof sits open. The women go, oh, God. What is this?
Magdalena yells as soon as she gets the text. She just screams, back up!
They start falling back. Like, what the? They start falling back. There is a dead dog in your trunk.
What?
What is wrong with you?
What? A dead dog? Magdalena looks over at Gavin. A dead dog? What?
Roxy? They look over and see.
I thought we poked holes in the trunk. Forgot all about it.
Just oh, no.
I could have sworn I poked holes in the trunk.
Wasn't that a Christmas present? It's been 5 months. Oh,
not Shoo Shoo.
She's been in there since Minnesota.
Shoo Shoo.
Shoo Shoo.
Oh no.
They step back. It's unprofessional. Where is it? Looking at Caesar. Where is it?
I don't know where it is. Maybe you want to have a dig around yourselves.
All right. We're done playing games. If you don't have it, you don't have it. I think you do. But I warn you, you're playing with powers you don't understand. We could have worked together on this. We could have made sure that this was taken care of carefully and that nobody else died. But now, you're leaving it to us to figure it out on our own. And we will, mind you. Just try to not kill yourselves. And she walks back past the car, trunk open, piece of string just like hanging down. She walks back, walks toward her car, gives everybody these nods. They all just start getting in their cars. Click, to click, to click, to click.
Wow.
Boom! Engines fire up. Lights come on. You guys are all just standing there in the middle of this thing. And they all just slowly start pulling out of the recycling center, one after another.
The old dead Rottweiler trick works every time. Am I right?
Why'd you... The grenade goes off.
Can we see what happened? Did it just...
Was it a dud?
Was it
a
dud?
Yeah, Roger, you knew after 5 seconds passed and there's no explosion, you know immediately, you're like... Yeah, it's actually not that surprising. Like, who knows how long that grenade has been in there? It's just... It's a dud.
Oh, man.
Magdalena leans against... Once they walk back towards the car, Magdalena leans against the car, and she's, like, breathing very hard. And she's like, okay, we almost royally fucked up. And she shows them the text, and she goes, what does this mean, Cumstone?
Let me see
Parker
that.
Confirmed, all caps, do not engage.
Well, it means one of two things. Either she's confirmed, or she's not working for them. But Delta Green still thinks she's working for us. Doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, I'm feeling a bit on the fence about what confirmed means.
All of you guys are starting to feel the weight of all of this weigh on you big time. And as they pull away, the adrenaline just starts to like flow away. And you start feeling really tired, really exhausted. This day started with, you slept in, but it started with an autopsy. And so it's been... A hell of a lot has happened just today.
What a day.
And you're starting to feel the exhaustion come over you. You've sort of decided that you don't want to work with them, that you don't want to give them the amulet. And that's all fine. But now you have to figure out next steps. You're exhausted. You have to... It's Saturday. Monday, Magdalena is supposed to report to the police. You know you have this murder to solve. You know that they want the amulet and you have it. You also know that there's another amulet. They seem to indicate that they've got people working on it, quote unquote. You don't know what that means. But you know that they're well-armed and well-informed. Because don't forget, even though you know a little bit more... There's a certain degree to which I think your characters could give a little credit to who they are by how much they know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. The fact that they know your former handler, the fact that they know about the supernatural, like nobody knows that shit. Nobody. So for you to like hear this in a meeting, it sort of lends some legitimacy immediately. Doesn't mean ideologically you have to agree with what they want to do, but it certainly stands to reason that, they're not a bunch of, you know, random thugs. Like, these people are legit who you're dealing with. And as they pull away, you have all of these options in front of you. But again, you're feeling the weight of all of this, and it's coming across in the form of exhaustion. If you stay up several more hours, you're going to start getting exhaustion mechanics. So it's up to you guys how you want to handle it.
Should I sleep with the amulet tonight?
Oh, shit.
That seems like a terrible idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to see Roger's dreams come to life.
Oh,
Joe is excited about it.
I just feel like I'm feeding Troy a thumbs up and an eager yes.
I mean, hold on.
Like we've got nothing else.
Yeah, wait, hold on.
We have so much to clean up already. I know. Having Cumstone unleash a supernatural being to prey upon the people he has grudges against just seems like the end of the world.
Well, I would say out of all of us, Cumstone should not be the one to wear it because he has so many enemies.
Yeah, like the whole world.
This is not a bad idea. I mean, this could be my tiredness.
To be fair, based on numbers alone, it stands to reason that Roger has physically, hand-to-hand, killed every single enemy he's ever had. Right. So there's probably none left.
But what Roger has to contend with is that killing that many people is just going to make some more enemies.
Yeah.
It just never ends.
No, go ahead. I was going to say, Magdalena, it could be her tiredness, but she's kind of on board. She's like, fuck it, wear the amulet. I don't fucking know.
Oh, look, let me suggest this. I think the only way forward, as far as I can see it, is to break this thing. I think we get a good night's sleep, make sure the amulet's safe, whatever we do with it. Sometime tomorrow, we try to perform this ritual in an isolated place. Try to make sure that we ourselves are protected, and we break the amulet. See what happens.
Would we tell the police about who the murderer is?
We don't have. Do they even have a single suspect? We have no one to pin it on.
The only thing we could hope is that somehow the boy was a somnambulist and walked alongside and has like DNA evidence at the scene. That's the only possible thing, and that's such a long shot.
That's the thing. There's no actual even like fake evidence tying this kid or anyone else to these crimes.
If I may, you, in my opinion, as a handler, you guys are just regular people in real life. As far as I know, you're not criminals. And so it stands to reason that, like, you wouldn't just have within your knowledge base the way to completely fabricate a crime, you know, the way that a true criminal would. And I'm not going to hold that against you in the same way I'm not going to hold against you that you don't actually know how to cast magic in Pathfinder. Like, your character knows, and you roll dice for it. In this case, I just want to point out some mechanics of the game, which are like, you can use mechanics like law or bureaucracy or whatever, or persuasion or whatever you don't have to enact every part of a plan, but you can say, if I want to pin a false indictment on somebody, my law skill is so high that it stands to reason your character knows a way to put an indictment on somebody. What kind of evidence would you need? What kind of whatever? And even if it turns into a not guilty verdict, you did your job, right? Like, your job, at least at the time, was to satisfy the police. If an indictment satisfies police, by the way, I am just completely coming up with this. Like, it's not in the book at all. There's nothing about like the PCs need to get an indictment and that is satisfies whatever. I'm just saying that like it's no possible appeals. that's all you would need, right? Then another year goes by before there's a trial. Maybe they're exonerated. Sure. As long as there's no more murders, who gives a shit?
Yeah. So all we have to do is stop people from investigating it and uncovering anything supernatural.
Exactly. Yes. That's your goal.
I think my hang up is like, we need to have, I 100% like Gavin knows a lot more about bureaucracy, criminology and law than Matthew does. But I feel like it needs, whatever theory we need to come up with needs to pass the smell test. And these people were decapitated, their spines ripped out, and seem to have been dropped from a high height. Like, we can't just be like, the teenager did it. Right, like
The crimes are so weird that even
here's my idea.
Okay,
the detective had a suspicion that it had to do with the Grumman facility,
Northrop Grumman. Mm. Yeah,
and we can find a way to use our bureaucracy and law skill to be like, the case has been referred to a higher, you know, to a higher power, and wink, wink, nudge, nudge, it's been closed.
Or maybe we can use the equipment in the RV to invent a fake Grumman employee that we can pin this on.
And say that they, burdened by the weight of their crimes, they killed themselves. And we found the body. And we'll just, Roger, we'll go find a body.
The body was found outside of the jurisdiction of the police department. So,
okay, hold on. This is crazy. And we, print an ID tag and we're like, here's the crisp burnt ID tag, you know, like.
Just a death certificate, really. All we need to, right?
Sure.
And then we found this guard dog eating his body after he killed himself.
Joe, can I roll criminology? I would assume maybe we're talking about this in the ride back to our hotel, because Magdalena needs to go to sleep. Can I roll a criminology to see sort of like what our best course of action might be in that sense of like how to close the case in that way?
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
I don't have a high criminology, but I do have it.
I mean, I can roll it too.
It's fine. With Gavin in your party, you would know. You don't have to roll. With Gavin in your party, you would know that it's a great idea to feed right into the detective's preconceived notions. You know, as a law attorney, as an up-and-coming law student, that one of the things they teach you is that, like, most cops are going to find the evidence that supports the theory they already have. You know, it's sort of a basic premise of psychology, not let alone criminology. And if you can feed into that and leave it to some, you know, magical secret government device, it stands to reason that it could create a dead end. But you don't want that dead end to raise too many questions. So if that dead end is a person that's dead, you know, I think you guys have the idea. How to actually put it all together, which to me, I don't need you to do that. I just need you to roll for that. And that's a combination, whatever you want it to be. Law, criminology,
bureaucracy.
Right. Bureaucracy is not quite right, but yeah.
Forensics for forgeries or anything like that?
Yes, forensics. Exactly. So like you don't necessarily have to have DNA to get an indictment or to get people off your back about who did this, you know what I mean? Like, or to get the cops off your back. You just, like Skid said, you just need to stop them from investigating the murder. That's all. That's really your goal.
Maybe actually, you know, maybe Jordy can use his writing skill to come up with a whole story of who this person is, along with motive and what happens to them and everything.
Right. So you're a fake FBI consultant. Actually, you're a real FBI consultant, but you know that you're a little bit fake. Why don't you, all Jordy knows. He just needs to throw some terms in there like, oh my God. Profile. He's profiling, yeah. Right? You've been collecting this evidence and you've been doing a psychological profile of who this killer is. This killer is this age. Mm-hmm. They work for Northrop Grumman. Mm-hmm. They you know, and then, you know, you just have to give them that person, whoever that person is. You know what I mean? Just fill that. And then you write that whole story. And I mean, people look at an FBI profile from somebody who's officially FBI, might not be a field agent, but officially FBI mind. And it carries a lot of weight.
Yeah.
Okay, so closing the case. There you go. I'm not saying it's closed. I'm just saying that's your idea.
That's
before you go to sleep. What about the
Winnebago, though? Are we done with the Winnebago?
Yeah, so the Winnebago, and you never Davies? Said it, but I assumed you locked it up when you left and left things as well as you could, except for the blood spot of the dog and whoever knows how long it took the cops to get there. But the Winnebago, as far as you know, is still accessible and locked up.
I wanted to listen to the tapes that were in there, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Because we have all that audio software anyway.
Here's the lingering thing for me is we still have to figure out how to get Magdalena out of her situation and maybe assess whether or not Tommy actually had some agency in the murders, like, or if there's anything else he can use, you know, supernaturally. I'm not... Mm. Like, my theory still is that he didn't have any, like, it just happened because he was sleeping, he was wearing the amulet. But I do worry.
What about Bennett Davies and Tom Terrific? Is there anything in there? Are those anagrams? I've been playing around with Bennett Davies ever since last week, and I still haven't got anything. But I'm wondering if these are clues. Or is the Winnebago just like a Delta Green drop box where, like, Delta Green agents can go do shit that they need to do that is untraceable? That maybe is what it is.
Stands to reason that's what it is.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that there's not some meaning to Bennett Davies. It just means that this isn't a once in a lifetime sort of like thing. It is pretty common to highly secretive espionage groups and stuff like that. You know, an area, a hideout, a green drop, you know, a place where you can exchange things and hide things that are very sensitive.
All right, so it's not, there's no connection there to the crime, most likely.
Do we think maybe we could talk to Tommy and find a way to at least get him to like rescind his complaint against Magdalena and get us out of that, and also maybe somehow compel him to be afraid of us?
I almost feel like I should just pull the I'm an adult and you're lying card. You know, it's his word against mine, which sucks. I mean, in reality, this is like a messed up power situation. But I said I was with you guys and I can't like go back on that. So as long as I stick to my story that like we were at B&H, we were in the city, I do not know what he's talking about. It must have been someone else.
Yeah, it is interesting. The one scene I did want to see with him, now that he's not empowered by the amulet, was to enrage him, to say, like, you had a teacher, you're not so happy with Di. Now we know your sweetheart's dead. How do you feel about that? And really push him to the edge and see how he feels about
and
it.
And your dentist, you loved him.
You loved him. You loved the Novocaine he put in you. You loved the drilling.
So you rest. So yes. Nobody does anything tonight.
I think exhausted. I think we're all exhausted.
Yeah.
Roger just puts the amulet on and lays down.
Jordy stays up for a bit, kind of writing an outline for his story.
Okay.
Before he goes to sleep.
But then gets some sleep. All right, everybody gets some rest and wakes up the next day, Sunday, early in the morning. No calls on your phones. It's a quiet, cold February Sunday morning on the North Fork of Long Island. You've got the whole day ahead of you. What do you want to do? Magdalena is supposed to meet Monday with the police. What do you want to do?
Jordy is going to use his writing and his criminology, and with consulting with everyone else, to come up with the crime story.
Okay.
And I'll use my criminology and my law and bureaucracy to help fabricate whatever evidence we need to support Jordy's story.
Yeah. Figure out what we need and yeah. So that's a collaborative effort for most of the morning.
Gavin, as you're doing some digging on this, trying to pull the correct evidence, you come across some shocking and very interesting information.
Go on.
You happen to notice, could it be a coincidence? Or is there no such thing as a coincidence in Delta Green? You happen to notice that Thomas's father is employed at Northrop Grumman.
What?
As you're going through a list of employees, or maybe what they do, what their titles are, what their ages are, etc., to sort of try to fabricate some evidence, you see the name Dengler, and you're just like, it's on a website, guy, headshot, says Dengler. And you're like, what the fuck? And you do a little bit more Googling, you know, just within the town sort of shit. And you're able to connect it back just with pure fucking law student research that Thomas's father is employed by Northrop Grumman. It's just a fact. It's a fact in the world. Doesn't mean that it's
what's you're supposed his to job do anything title? With it.
But it's just a fact.
What's his job title?
His job title is, it says right under his picture on the webpage, aerospace components engineer. What do you do?
Pin it all on him.
And pin it all on the dad?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's no reason to pin it all on this guy if he actually is
connected. You should see this guy's picture of the website. He looks like the nicest guy on earth. Sorry, what do you do?
Oh, okay. So if he looks like an asshole, I don't feel bad. But
let's continue.
He's giving the finger. It is his corporate head.
Oh, fuck that guy.
Fuck, that guy seems like a real dick.
Let's continue with our plan to pin it on an invented person.
Yeah.
But I will bring it up with Caesar and Magdalena to see if they could do a little background research on Dangler Sr.
Mm.
Absolutely. Also, we can really sow the seeds to the local police department. You know, we can sort of hand them the clues and sort of say, you know, oh, we found out that Thomas Dangler's father works at Northrop Grumman and we've been looking into them. And, you know, it seems we don't have anything that we can share, but like it seems there might be a connection and sort of, I don't know, maybe they'll dig shit up for us.
Well, yeah. And during our research too, I was just thinking about ways to use different skills. And one skill that doesn't get used a ton is accounting. If we ever get to see financial information for any pertinent individuals or company-wide on Archon or on Northrop Grumman that's available through the FBI or local police databases, I don't know if Caesar can do any roles to show connections between people that align with any of our theories, or at least could kind of like drive a money motivator theory forward if we're fabricating a case.
Yeah. I think Magdalena.
They got Capone. Yep.
I think Magdalena's working with you then, Caesar, on like the tech side of stuff, and I'm literally doing like the CSI generator thing where like the faces flash through the screen as it's rotating through all the characteristics that I put in. So I'm like, must be blah 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 height, must be working in this field, must be blah blah blah. Yeah. So I don't know if you want me to roll for that or I spend the better part of the day doing it.
No. It's fine. You can do all of that, and Northrop Grumman has a ton of employees, and you see that it just spits out to you with your like background deep. You're hacking now. This isn't like what's on the front of the site. You're basically hacking, and you are able to. It pulls three employees that would like fit your MO. Mm-hmm. MO, not MO. Whatever. Fit your profile. Mm-hmm. One of which is Mark Dangler.
Oh.
Really? Huh. Magdalena looks at Caesar.
Oh, God.
Oh, and Gavin. God.
Let's dive into his books. See how dirty he gets.
Can I roll an accounting to see if he's done anything unusual?
Any research totally you do, like, none of these people have any sort of criminal record or anything like that.
Okay.
Well, I'm happy to use accounting to, like, fudge a weird financial transaction with the dentist. Something that went wrong that would motivate the first crime.
The checks bounced and the dentist freaked out and then the son murdered.
No, but that's right. You don't have to go into any great detail.
Yeah.
You're looking to pin this on Mark Dangler, so you're going to plant evidence.
Why are we pinning it on Mark Dangler?
Maybe if he had been a better father.
I don't
even know.
His
son wouldn't have done this. He's guilty.
Why are we doing this?
Well, it's said that the son shall not suffer the sins of the father, but not the other way around. So
that's
let's
true.
Pin it on the dad.
So we're wide open there.
But again, why are we doing this?
Yeah, I'm still on board with inventing
a person.
Yeah, a black ops Grumman employee.
Well, don't forget it was the kid's grandfather that was involved. Like maybe the dad isn't clean.
Well, but that doesn't matter. If that's true, then we still need to be able to close the case, we don't want the dad talking to the cops. So better just close it and then deal with the dad ourselves.
I think we need to meet with him.
And now we've opened up the back doors necessary to insert artificial identity of all of our creation to create all of the forged documents, social security cards, birth certificates, anything we need to leave a paper trail of a person without there being a person within Northrop Grumman's system, if we need to go that route.
So you found all of their identification, but just not them?
No, I'm saying we have three people we get pinned on. We're reluctant to pin it on because Matthew has a heart of gold.
it just raises more suspicion about what was actually going on to pin it on the kid's dad.
I like that he's upset at being told he has a heart of gold. You wonderful person, you. I love you. We have these three people. I'm just saying we have the back door open to insert a personality that we can create to pin it on because we don't want to go that way because it's going to create more suspicion.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Like a consultant or something, someone that very few people would be expected to personally know at the company.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Roger's going to go out for a pack of smokes. He goes down, leaves the hotel, heads down to the corner store, gets a pack of smokes. As he's walking back, he sees a payphone and looks at it. Kind of shakes his head and then walks a little bit and then looks back at it and rips open the plastic on his pack of cigarettes, pulls one out, turns it over, and makes it a lucky, then grabs a second one, lights it real quick, and starts walking towards the payphone. And he's smoking a little bit frantically. And he picks up the payphone and he drops a coin in and he presses a few numbers and then kind of lingers over one last number, number 9, and then dials. And he's calling his ex-wife.
Oh, wow.
North.
Click. Hello.
Hey, Norma, it's me, Roger. Don't hang up. Don't hang up.
What do you want, Roger?
Listen, I've been meaning to call you. I'm back around, back in the Northeast. How are you?
Roger, I don't want to do this again. You can't come around here.
No, I know. I just thought maybe I'd check in with you and let you know that I'm back, and I might not be here for a long time, but maybe we should.
Are you going back to Puerto Rico?
I don't know. I don't know where I'm gonna end up. Got a job I gotta finish, but I thought it'd be nice if maybe we could just connect, maybe grab a bite to eat, and maybe I could see him.
What?
Oh.
I don't think that's a good idea, Roger.
I just thought it'd be nice. I got some baseball cards I was gonna show him. I think he'd really get a kick out of them. Can't buy them anywhere. They're priceless. I was just gonna give them to him. I don't want to send them in the mail. They'll get all wrinkled and they'll lose their value. I got some other stuff, some shirts. I was gonna bring them.
Yeah, Roger. You know I want you to see him, but I mean, if you give him stuff, Eric's gonna know about it, and he's gonna get upset. I don't know.
I don't really care about Eric and what he wants. I just want to see my son.
I know you don't, Roger, but you know what? It affects my life. And so I care what he thinks.
He's not his dad, you know. He's not his dad, and he never will be.
I don't want to fight.
Me neither. And he hangs up.
Walks away. Like the idea that whole conversation is like you just hear her voice through the phone. You never see her.
You
don't know what she looks like.
John McClane's wife in Die Hard 1.
And so mechanically, that moves his bond score from her. Finally, it comes full circle from 6 to 3.
Oh. Okay. As he's projecting on his bond.
Projecting his sanity, yeah. Awesome.
Okay, so you guys are spending the day, you know, kind of creating a story, a profile for this killer, figuring out how to plant the evidence between Magdalena's hacking and Gavin's law knowledge, and Jordy's just way with story and words that make it fit in such a way that anybody could easily digestible.
He's known for his plots.
Right, he's known for his plots. You guys are able to put together what you look back and think is a pretty convincing story, but it takes you pretty much all day. Is that all you want to do today?
Magdalena confides in, after Gavin has done like this, you know, good law research that led Caesar and I to look further into Northrop Grumman. I think she confides in Gavin and says, "I'm a little worried about tomorrow, about the meeting with Detective Gregson."
Well,
in your professional opinion, not that you're my lawyer, but what would you suggest I do, hypothetically?
I'm glad you said hypothetically, because I'm not a lawyer, and I can only, if I were to say I was a lawyer, I could only give hypothetical advice. Can I roll a criminology to see, like, to give us to think, to like give me some insight onto how we should approach this with the cops?
I also have a 50 bureaucracy. Could I roll alongside and see if we think of anything?
I just want to put out there that Roger, when he comes back, is very ornery, more ornery than usual, and says that he wants to trail the dad tonight.
Oh.
Cool.
You sure that's a good idea? I mean, just kind of want to wrap things up here, I think.
Yeah, no, I think what you've come up with is a good idea, but I don't know. Sometimes you just get an intuition and you got to follow it. Maybe it's nothing. But I already have trouble sleeping. I won't be able to sleep until I know he's clean.
Well, yeah, all right. I mean, I trust your instincts. Just don't hurt anybody, okay?
Yeah, you want to come with Jordy?
Yeah, why the hell not?
Be good to have company.
Sure, yeah.
All right, so you guys are going to try to pick up and then tail Mark Dengler while the rest of you are going to put together this plan. I'll say with a 50 bureaucracy, you're confident about how you bring it to the police, at least. Whether it all, you know, comes out the way you want it to remains to be seen, but it's certainly not going to be the way that you present it that's going to be the problem. So you're going to be fine on that. You have a solid plan. Jordy and Roger decide to follow Mark Dengler, and as you guys are waiting in a parked car, like near the Northrop Grumman facilities, you know, it's just waiting to try to pick up what kind of car he's driving. You know what he looks like, and so you're kind of waiting for him to leave. You have a news radio on from, you know, the local area, and it's just sort of giving you updates on like stuff that's going around. And for the first time, you officially hear over the radio the announcer saying the latest victim in the Glen Ridge chiropractor case has been identified as local high school junior Lauren Hotvin, or I'm sorry, Lauren Harrogate. He corrects himself on air. Lauren Harrogate. The teen was reported missing from her home at 10 o'clock p.m. and was later found dead and decapitated by the Glen Ridge chiropractor, allegedly by the Glen Ridge chiropractor at the corner of Route 23, Route 25, and blah, blah, blah. And so, like, now you see that they've, like, released the name and, the evidence of, like, who the person was. And you wait and you see this guy come out. You recognize him, and he gets into his Nissan Altima, and
that's this car I made up in my head. I was saying to myself, oh, wow. Nissan
and
Altima.
So Roger was like,
"I knew it, Altima Typical. All the way."
Black Nissan Altima. So he gets in the car. He pulls out in front of you guys and starts driving. you go to tail him and you start following him through town, and you don't even need a drive check. It's so simple. He just drives right home, parks outside of his house, gets out of the car, walks up to his front door. Seems pretty routine. Seems pretty routine. Which is exactly what he wants you to think.
Yeah. Jordy turns to Roger.
Kill him.
Finish him off.
Roger's just like, I'm in so deep now. I don't know. I don't know what's right and what's wrong. Something just doesn't feel right. Could it be just nightmares of this kid? I have nightmares every night. People don't end up dead the next day unless I choose to do it.
I don't know. It's this thing. It's this thing and the dog. I don't know if there's something more happening here. We know something with this thing. This amulet. I don't know. I don't know. It scares me a little bit.
What if we went to Peru?
I'd love to go to Peru.
Go to Peru, though, and get the other amulet.
Oh, for business. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I think... maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe Peru would be nice.
Yeah.
Be hard to... hard to find somebody that just left and went to Peru.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe we can make use of that ID creation stuff at last.
Yeah. Might be nice. I guess we should get back.
Takes one last look at the house. Sees, like, the guy walking around his living room, pummeling his wife.
My God, what is right? I knew it! Get in there! Yeah.
Up against the blinds.
You son of a bitch!
Roger takes a shot.
Right. I knew it was dirty!
Roger walks up, pulls all the Christmas lights off the house.
Christmas is canceled.
So the guy's totally clean. He's not doing anything. He's not doing anything.
At least not tonight, not Sunday night, ma'am. He's just chilling. He's watching playoff football.
Catch him doing something.
So I'm still...
He did a Super Bowl in February.
Jordy is still leaning towards...
Oh, right. It's February, not January.
Oh, get him!
Sorry.
Well, caught his lie.
I knew something wasn't right.
So he's not watching shit, and he's depressed. Because it's late February. Horrible time. Between the Super Bowl and March Madness. Nothing.
Watching the Islanders is super depressed.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still... Jordy is still, I think, wants to destroy this thing. Perform the ritual to protect ourselves. Or actually, we don't all need to be there.
Gavin is interested in the ritual itself.
Yeah.
He is.
And maybe he finds Jordy when you get back and he's like, I heard what you were saying about the ritual, and I think I could be interested in that solution.
Yeah. I don't know, kid. You're young. I mean, something goes wrong. You got your whole life ahead of you. Me, on the other hand.
Right, but if something goes wrong, you're old. What are you going to do? He smiles.
That's a fair point. You remind me of your mother a little bit, more and more every day. All right, if you want to join, I'm ready to do this thing.
Are you going to do it?
So do we sneak off into the night and perform the ritual?
Yeah, I think we go out into the woods.
Just the two of you?
Yeah.
Oh my God!
Holy shit! All right, so without anyone else's knowledge.
You don't even wake us up to like tell us,
we just go. Because I think Jordy's like, I don't want them to try to talk us out of it. I don't want them to join us because if something does go wrong, I don't want to put the whole group at risk.
And Gavin doesn't want to admit to that many people that he's into occult rituals.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do I need to look up a new section of the rules?
I'm just going to move forward, assuming that Gavin understands with his occultish background that you know this isn't just like flipping a switch. It's pretty intense, and it can have an effect on, you know, the operators, the people that engage in these rituals. And I mean, it's right out of the book. It's mechanical, but Gavin would know that there can be some damage associated with it. You know, whether that is blood, you know what I mean, or sanity or whatever. You know, you're putting a lot at risk doing a ritual like this. So as long as you're aware of that and you want to proceed, feel free.
Gavin is going in, eyes open.
Okay, excellent. Oh, I'm so happy. All right. So you guys sneak off, and the two of you begin this ritual. Now, you know that it's going to take a couple hours, and you're going to be, you know, you've already sort of researched a decent amount of it. Now it's just a matter of actually enacting it, which, from what you're reading, requires you to draw the blood of those that are participating, the participants, run it over something smooth, and then onto the clay tablet while saying the words.
Fucking crazy. When I heard Jordy say, oh, the protective ritual, I was like, protective?
Yeah.
What? I'm excited to see what happens.
Yeah. What is our something smooth, Skid?
I got my BlackBerry screen. It's gonna like drain the blood over the BlackBerry screen and onto the tablet.
That is so great. Fucking BlackBerry. Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. So out in the woods, we see them, and maybe they light a little fire so that they can see, and they hunker down and begin this creepy ritual.
I will say I refuse to read the actual words that are written out on the image you show us in Roll 20, just in case this is real.
Right. I'm a little freaked out too, but if you want me to read them, I'll read them.
Begin reading.
Okay. Okay. I need the Roll 20 page. We're still on the medical report.
Yes,
right
I'm
now.
Sorry. I apologize.
Make them up, Skid. You know that.
I actually have it in the journal, too. I just haven't done it yet. I got to unlock it in the journal. But by all means, go ahead.
All right. So Jordy is us, like they both. He has his little penknife and they like slice across their palms, I guess, and like dribble it over the BlackBerry onto this clay tablet as Jordy reads. Ja, na, kadish tu nilgri stelbs na nyogtha kjarna kflegethur le bumnas jah nikte jahai kadish tu epruchluchle riotha e sung ach lit ni ore siha.
Okay, and as you're reading it, you can. You feel something is happening. Like, hard to describe what it is, but Gavin, you can feel, you know, as the blood is pouring out over this thing, that it is actually draining from you in a way that's rather upsetting. And it is, it's more blood than should be sort of coming out. And you can feel that you're getting like lightheaded and you're actually, you're taking hit point damage. So it is, you're taking 1d6 points of damage as this thing seems to be sucking blood right out of your system.
This was not in the original deal.
I know. I'm like trying to figure out how to tell you that like there's a cost without telling you the actual cost. But it's pretty bad.
1d6. Do you want to roll it? Do you want me to roll it?
You can roll it.
I'll roll it.
It'll be hilarious. It'll be so funny when Cumstone and Magdalena wake up and there's two more murders completely unrelated to you two in the woods.
Desanguinated corpses lying in the forest.
Just up to Caesar, Magdalena, and Roger.
The dream team.
The three. I want to be D'Artagnan.
So it is...
I take 2 points of damage, by the way.
2 points, okay. And your blood is hitting this tablet as it's running coming over Jordy's BlackBerry and just like soaking into the tablet. It's not pouring off the tablet. It's going into it, and it's just like there's no like flash. There's no like magic to it or anything, but it does seem unnatural the way that the blood is seeping into the clay. All of a sudden, you drop the tablet and the BlackBerry at the same time, just like boom, and the tablet just hits like soft ground. It doesn't break or anything, and both of your heads just snap back. And I need you both to roll a sanity check.
This is, I was more expecting this.
Yeah, this is what I thought the cost would be.
Not blood.
Oh, great. 13 under 56.
Oh, no.
I pass. Gavin's okay.
Jordy, no. Oh, Jordy, you're going to take 4 points of sanity
damage.
Oh,
my God. Oh.
And there's hit point damage. There's sanity damage. But then there's something else. You feel as if this ritual is drawing your very life force out of you. I mean, to Jordy, I almost think it might feel like a whisper or a voice inside, deep inside, that's just kind of going, let go. That's just begging you to stop fighting, to stop standing up to the rigors of life, the struggles of existence. Just like you feel your will to live waning almost, as if it's being drained out of you. You both also take 1d6 power damage, willpower damage.
What?
Yes.
What? 1d6?
Yes. 1d6 willpower damage.
Oh, I'm taking this.
4 points of power damage?
4 points of power damage.
3 points of power damage.
Oh, that's going to hit your sanity.
It's funny you say that, Sydney, because at that moment, both Jordy and Gavin collapse to the ground and fall on the soft earth, unconscious, and for all we know, most likely dead. The camera slowly pulls back and up, and we hear nothing but the faint sound of wind in the trees and like far off sounds of owls and insects of the night. And as we reach the treetops, you look down at a bird's eye view of two unmoving, unconscious bodies of Jordy and Gavin, with a BlackBerry and a clay tablet on the ground by their heads. And we'll see you there next time.
Oh my God.
There is going to be an upside, right?
No, the BlackBerry's not even waterproof.
And we chose to do this ritual. Why would we do this? This is terrible.
Why would we do this?
I hope this ritual is still under warranty, because I want my money back.
You got 11.
Got 11.
Got 11. Oh, man.
3,000-year warranty.